Welcome to another Carlin and Lade Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, we've just had another Australian Open.
Did we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that golf?
Well, they have Australian Open golf, but I think this one was tennis.
Tennis, right. Okay.
I think it started around about 1905, the first
That's
Australian
Open. That's a very long tournament then, to go for that long.
Well, I suppose if you're doing it, you know, adding them all up, but... They play the Rod Laver Arena at Melbourne Park next to the MCG, so they have obviously players from all around the world, including Australians. But just first off, some of these Aussies, like Kyrgios, Nick Kyrgios and Bernard Tomic, they're not giving Australians a very good name, are they?
I don't want to get on the bandwagon. Like, I mean, you know, we do a little podcast. It doesn't really matter, does it, like no. What we say? But I look at it and go, they really annoy me as a sports person. And I think I was thinking about it because there was so much press again. Like, we had some bloody good players in the tournament, some really good young guns who were coming through who played really well. But it just seemed that there was a lot of media attention on those two. And that's what frustrates me because, and the thing in there, I thought, why does this bug me? And it bugs me because I don't think they really have what we would say is Australian ethos or character when it comes to sport. You know, like,
they don't represent the culture as we've known it.
Well, then you go, is this the new culture? But then you see these other young guys and girls are there, and they're not like that. But these guys seem to have had, and I don't. Then you go, is this a media beat up? But then you listen to some of the comments, and you know that the interviewers are baiting them.
Yeah.
But they always bite back, and then of course, you know, Bernard Tomic goes out in the first round, and then basically he just rips into Leighton Hewitt. Now, I remember when Leighton Hewitt came on the scene. He was a young, brash,
fiery.
Sort of fiery. But yeah. But he, like, you think, wow, this guy never gave up. Like, he was as tough as nails. I mean, how many five-setters did he have? And even though he had the come on, and it was like people sort of thought that was a bit over the top. At least he had guts and courage, and he never quit. And then all of a sudden, instead of Tomic talking about his performance, he's now having a go at Leighton Hewitt. And then that becomes the story.
I think, look, every sports person has a detractor and they have supporters. But to be honest, watching Leighton Hewitt, you kind of identify with him as an Australian. But you look at these other guys like Bernard Tomic and Nick Kyrgios, I look at them as, yeah, they're not sort of what I want on the court representing me as an Australian.
No, and I think that's it. Well, I don't know what they're going through and what they're up to. And I know my wife just read a book about Andre Agassi. And it's interesting, like he actually said in his book that he actually hated tennis. But as a young kid, he was so pushed and he had to do so much work, but he actually hated it. And that's what he had in common with Steffi Graf. Because like when they had those, and they shared that sort of thing about, we actually hated it because we just had to do so much of it. But they were obviously made a living out of it. And now that they're kids, they don't play tennis, they do what they want.
Well, they don't have to do that.
And then you start thinking about these guys, you think, well, what's their upbringing been like, you know, and we see a lot, we've heard a lot a bit about that in tennis where, you know, it's almost like abuse, isn't it, the type of hours and the type of things they have to do, and you think, well, what effect does that have on young guys and girls, and also the money. Well, let's talk about that later, but the money is, I think, obscene.
$62.5 million total for everyone. I mean,
first round, and I think there's some interesting things here, but first round, you're out in first round, there's 60 grand.
Wow.
Right, so now, that's more than what a lot of Aussies will make in a year, like working normally. And then, like, the guys who got into the third round and stuff like that, they're making
165,
160
yep.
grand.
Yep.
And you think, even 4.5 to win, right? So you think an AFL player here, we got a few guys on $1 million a year, right?
Yep.
But there's, like, 4 or 5 years of playing footy, home and away games, 20 games a year, finals, to make $4 odd million, $4 or $5 million, and these guys are making it in a tournament.
Well, good on them if they can get it, mate. That's all I can say. I mean, what did you do with your millions from your hammer thigh?
I invested in something that just flopped. I wish.
Hey, look, now, turning the page a little bit, you look at young Alex Bolt, out of the blue now. I remember sort of when he was coming up through the circuit, I know I wrote a few stories about him. He come down to Elizabeth and played in that tournament there. And he was coached by Peter Vandeleur, And he was sort of like a good kid. Then he just disappeared off the scene. And then I read in the media in regards to he basically gave the game away, started playing footy with his brother.
And labouring.
And he was a basketballer. And he won the MVP in the basketball as well. Now he's come back, and he's a good news story. He stepped away from the game, and he's come back to his roots, been a top tennis player, made the third round. He's set up now so he can play in tournaments all around the world without worrying about where his next meal's coming from.
And that's the interesting thing. Like, I had not, I mean, I just looked at the money and thought, wow, like I said before, that just seems like a lot of money. But then the commentators were talking and they talked about that money, and they said, you know, for guys like this who are trying to make it, it's so tough. Like, if you don't get into a big meet or a big tournament, then of course you don't make the money, and then you're limited to what you can do for the rest of the year. Whereas these guys now, like we had, you know, like Ashley Barty's been doing really well, and even like Alex Popperin, another young guy who's made the third round. So all these, like all of a sudden they're making, start of the year, 150, 160 grand. Now they can sit down and plan the rest of their year. So they can go to tournaments, they can travel, they've got places, they can have accommodation. So all of a sudden they can actually commit to performing and training and saying, well, this is worth it. Because you can imagine there's been lots and lots of tennis players around the world and in Australia who are working very, very hard, making nothing like most sports people. And they're just on the verge. And as you said, like that's a real example, isn't it? Goes away from tennis, has a break, comes back playing the best tennis ever. Whereas if he hadn't come back, it would have been one of those stories. Again, here's a young guy who's worked hard for a long period of time, got to a certain level, couldn't make it. Because it is, you've got to have money behind you in sports like tennis to be able to be successful.
Yeah, you look at the men's and the women's open finals, and there's a contrast in the men's. You have Novak Djokovic.
Is it Djokovic or Djokovic?
Djokovic.
See, I've been here like here. How many? I mean, it's hard. I mean, the other day the TV was saying Djokovic. I thought it was Djokovic, but I wasn't sure.
Well, I don't like the Djokovic. It sounds like it's a bit of a joke, but
he's a bit of a joker.
He is. No,
he's very good. He comes across really funny.
I've seen when he's questioned a couple of times. He answers his questions very well, and he endears himself.
Very articulate and great sense of humour. That's what you're sort of used to in tennis. Those type of guys at the top who are sort of that really real gentleman champions.
Now, that was, what, his seventh title. He won in 08, 11, 12, 13, 15, 16. He's consistently winning the Australian Open, so that's obviously his pet event. And Rafael Nadal, he beat him 6-3, 6-2, 6-3. Nadal's only ever won it once in 2009. But
Nadal's a clay specialist, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Nadal obviously coming off a bit of injury. So, I mean, he's just a class act, really. I mean, there's those guys at the top, they're just a different level, aren't they?
Oh, they are, but they play tennis, which sort of makes you want to watch them because they have that little bit of extra that, you know, when you watch the earlier matches where they win 6-1, 6-2, 6-3, it's sort of like, it's almost like they're going through the paces, but when you get to the quarterfinals, semifinals and the finals, that's where it's really worth watching the tennis, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is, and like some of the shots they return, that's to say the kids at school, like you think, these guys and girls are serving, you know, 150 to 200 kilometres an hour. In that, it's a small space, isn't it? And yet they just seem to have all the time in the world just to pick where the ball is and play a nice forehand shot down the line to win. You think, that ball, I wouldn't even see that ball. It just goes straight by me. But I think, what about Ashley Barty? Isn't she been a bit of a revelation for tennis in Australia?
Oh, absolutely. The funny thing is, I remember when I first started watching a little bit of tennis and Yvonne Goolagong and... And she changed her name to Corley. I mean, when she won those Wimbledon titles, I mean, she was like one of my early heroes. But since then, there hasn't been a lot of Australian women that have been prominent, not to that level. So, but the men haven't either. I mean, we get the old one with Pat Cash and Leighton Hewitt and people like that and the Woodies in the doubles. But it's not like when I was a kid and you had John Newcombe and Rod Laver and you had... Yeah, Australia had almost a mortgage on it.
Do you think, though, and I wonder whether the legacy of those guys who were fabulous tennis players, because I'm going to be honest, and I'm not a great fan of tennis. Like, I've never been a great tennis player. It doesn't really excite me that much, but I love to, you know, obviously follow the Australians and see how they're going. But what hit me was when Barty was doing so well, it really captured the national media. And there was a lot of media, and you think, wow, that's a lot of pressure. And that's what I wonder about our port. You know, like Sam Stowe's another one. I felt like she did well, you know, back in the early, like 2010, 2011. And now she just gets bagged all the time. But like she won the doubles in the week. Now, that's $750,000.
Wow.
It's not a bad payday, is it?
I'll take it.
I would keep playing. I'd be playing. But I wonder whether these, because we've had such a legacy of tennis, now that when we do get someone who sort of shines a bit, we put so much pressure on them because we want to get that sort of golden era back again, that it makes it hard for them. I wonder whether, you know, that's why some of these guys find it difficult in the limelight, in the media, because we really do love our tennis as a nation, and we really do want to sort of have those people who are doing well in on the international scene.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because a lot of people like the cricket, a lot of people like the tennis. Now, Channel 7 and Channel 9 switched. I think because of the problems we've had in cricket, Channel 9 have won that change-up, because tennis has been more popular than cricket this season.
It has to be. I mean, as I said, look at the money. Look at, I mean, the media interest. It's huge. I mean, you know, it's only the four Grand Slams, so it is one of the, you know, the big elite competitions. But
then you've got Davis Cup too.
Yeah, of course, and that's, yeah. But that, there's still a difference, isn't there?
Yeah, and they will be changing the Davis Cup rules this season as well, I believe, which I'm not sure if I like them altogether, but I'm a bit of a traditionalist. Now, while we've mentioned Djokovic and his easy win relatively over Nadal, 6-3, 6-2, 6-3, wasn't the women's game the final? Wasn't that sensational? That Japanese lady, Naomi Osaka, defeated Petra Kvitova?
Yeah,
7-6. Yeah, I know. 7-6, 5-7, 6-4. I mean, we'll probably never mention these names again, so it's not like their everyday usage when we talk sports, is it?
No, and I always think these commentators do a great job, aren't they, when they've got to pronounce all the names from all over the world, which is fabulous. But that was a good game, and I felt so sorry for Naomi Osaka when in the US Open with the stuff that happened. And, like, it was overshadowed, and I thought, wow, you know, you finally got a breakthrough, and then all this stuff happens. And I was watching her playing, you think, I wonder how that affected her, because even when she won, it was like she was not happy. And it was almost like she was, like, to me, it was like, are you waiting for a reaction? I thought this
she was stunned.
A real relief, yeah.
She was stunned.
And yet she played. I mean, she obviously lost a set and then got herself together and came back and won it. And so, but she, again, seemed such a humble, quiet, like it was like, oh my God, I've won another thing. And you think, wow,
And she didn't know what to do. I mean, I was, interestingly enough, I was looking at her Facebook type site where she got all these photos and she couldn't decide which photo to use with the winner's trophy. But so to me, that says that she really, really loved winning this and she wanted the best possible photo because she loved it, but she didn't know how to boast about it.
Mm.
So,
and she obviously, that's her personality. She didn't come across as, whereas Djokovic, you know, winning seven, I mean, he's a bit of a showman, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he was down with hands in the air, on the knees, all that. And I thought, I just wondered whether it was just a weird sort of response to winning. And that other girl, Petra Kvitova, how do you say it again, you reckon?
Kvitova. At least I tried.
You try. The story, I mean, the interesting backstory was that she'd been attacked in her home and been
slashed on the hand.
And so that was, again, a nice little story to come back and be in the Open and the final. And so that was a nice sort of thing, even though she didn't quite get there in the end.
Well, probably some of the aspects of the players, when they finish, they give the interviews. They sign the balls. They give people in the crowd towels and tennis balls and things like that. So they really endear themselves to the Australian public. And they all, the interviews I heard, is no matter which country they came from, they said they love coming to Australia.
I think that's the standard reply now, isn't it?
Well, it must be, but I think there's some sincerity in it because you can see in their faces that they, you know, when they write, their eyebrows sort of light up. It's, yes, I do like this, and I don't think it's insincere. I think they really do love coming here.
I think, and as a, you know, part of our culture and character, isn't it? Like, I think we love our sport in all areas, and we certainly have shown in a range of areas when we've got something. You think Formula One, for example, think the Olympics, think those things. I think generally we've got passionate people, well-organized people, and they do a good job. And so it seems that it does seem a common thing when people say, oh, you know, that was that. This is the best tournament, or this is the best race, or this is that. And so you wonder whether they're just saying that for the sake, or whether obviously there is some truth to it, that, you know, we do put on a good show.
Well, so ends another Callum Lowe Sports Show. I'm Robert Lowe.
How long? We just probably racked up $30,000, did we, in that?
$35,000.
Okay, I expect my payday.